served at the Pentagon as an Army JAG. He graduated from Notre Dame and has two law degrees from Boston University and Georgetown University. He's been practicing law for over 30 years. He's your family's personal attorney. It's time for the David Carrier Show.
Hello and welcome to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, and you have found the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. So give us a call, why don't you? 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843. If you have a question, comment, or concern about wills, about trusts, about probate, powers of attorney, you know, can you be a power of attorney? Can you have a power of attorney? Can you be an attorney, in fact, without going to law school? The answer may surprise you. Of course, it may not surprise you either because, no, of course, you don't have to go to law school for that. But anyway, give us a call, 888-463-2843, if you'd like to get your question on the air. You can also drop us an email, David at davidcarrierlaw.com, or, you know, we try to make this as easy as we can. You can go to the website, davidcarrierlaw.com, and on the website, there's a place for you to just write a little, you know, you can even leave us a note there without an email. I mean, how convenient is that? Well, it's pretty convenient. And you can use the same process to sign up for one of our free life plan workshops. We just started something about 45 minutes ago where, you know how some people, you say, well, you know what, do you need a personal invitation to come to the dinner table? You know, that was one of my mom's favorite things when she was calling. Well, and there were eight of us, right? So eight personal invitations to come to dinner, that would not have worked very well. And the same way with the Life Plan Workshop. Do you need a personal invitation? Well, you know something? If you do, if you would like a personal invitation, or if you've been trying to get mom and dad or trying to drag the kids along or what have you to come to a Life Plan Workshop, what we will do for you, see, well, you can get all your Christmas shopping done. One easy step, just request a personal invitation. Just say who we should address the invitation to, okay? And I will send you a personal invitation to a workshop. How about that? Handwritten. There you go. And then you can see what you can do is you've been trying to get the folks to the workshop, trying to get your spouse to the workshop. Now you have something to put under the, you know, I figure if they're, I saw an ad for these scratch and win lottery tickets and whatnot. Right. Well, you got to pay all kinds of money for those. This is free. So, and it's almost as fun. It's almost as fun as winning the lottery. So anyway, if you would like a personal invitation, we can make that happen. And if you want us to send it to the person, that's fine. If you want us to send it to you, so now you have a little stocking stuffer there, that's no problem either. Okay. Let's get to some of the emails. This is a situation that comes up fairly frequently, and there are multiple consequences to it. Question, will borrowing from my fiancé's grandmother, intending to pay her back, make me charged with financial exploitation? I'm a 21-year-old female, who apparently didn't finish high school English. I'm a 21-year-old female with no criminal record ever. Okay? So can you borrow from your fiancé's grandmother? Well, the short answer is you might be able to do that, okay? You might be able to do that, but that is an area with a lot of risk. See, when you borrow from somebody, especially someone who might be needing the long-term care, that borrowing has to be done according to the Medicaid rules. Did you know that Medicaid had rules about borrowing? Well, it does. That thing has got to bear a market rate of interest, there has to be security, again, if appropriate, and it has to be paid back within the life expectancy of the fiancé's grandmother. Okay, you can't just give her an IOU and I'll get back to you at some point. And here it doesn't even sound like we've got a writing. It says, we're borrowing, intending to pay her back. Well, if you want to tell me, we're borrowing from my grandmother, from my fiancé's grandmother, you know, with a promissory note, you know, that meets all the Medicaid requirements and is secured by whatever. And, by the way, I'm not bankrupt or insolvent or anything else. I'm a good credit risk. Will that make you charged with financial? Well, probably not. No, probably not. 21 years old, that's great. Okay, have you had a bankruptcy yet or no? No bankruptcy, great. Are you solvent? Yes. Okay, fine. No problem then, you know, if it's documented right. If there's an independent person, and, you know, what is grandmother's state of mind? You know, is she under the control of that fiancé? I mean, is the fiancé just a, you know, just a grandkid, or, you know, is he taking care of her? Where is it? You know, what are the facts and circumstances of the case? Certainly, borrowing from an older person, intending to pay them back, doesn't look like borrowing to the court. To the court, which is used to seeing grandkids, right, stealing grandpa's Social Security to buy meth, right? They see those kind of cases. All the time they see those kind of cases. So now you're saying, yeah, without documentation, with my good intentions, blah, 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 I took grandma's money. You know what that looks like? Well, it looks bad. Let me just put it that way. It looks bad to the court, so you shouldn't do it, okay? So we'll borrow, and not necessarily, but certainly it might. Same, next question is a little bit similar to that. My sister has been caretaker for my dad, but now he's in a nursing home. Can I pay his bills and back pay her without Medicaid issues? I have power of attorney and want to see if I should pay his doctor bills and pay my sister for a week. She did not get paid. So sister took time off work, right? So she didn't get paid at the job, and she was caring for dad. Now, there's no question that a professional service, if you had hired a service to take care of dad, you certainly could use dad's money for it. It says here we have to pay lawyer fees, etc. Still not sure if it will cause a problem. Still not sure if it will cause a problem with him getting approved for Medicaid. It'll cause a huge problem, a gigantic problem. Because you cannot pay, by common law anyway, a family member for providing services. Those services are presumed to be gratuitous, okay? That means presumed to be for free. You did it for love and affection, not because you're going to get paid, which is probably also true, right? But if you comply with the regulations about providing services and getting paid for them, yeah, you can get paid. The problem is, families don't generally do what you need to do to get qualified under the rules. And what they do is, you have sister who takes time off of work to take care of dad and all the rest. Dad's going into the nursing home. We've got this extra money. Hey, why don't I pay back sister, right, for the time she had to take off of work? Seems logical. Seems fair. Seems all those things. Yeah, it does. I'm sympathetic to that, believe me. But it ain't going to work. It's going to be treated as if that was simply a gift. This is different than the doctor bills. So go ahead and pay the doctor bills. Pay the house insurance. Pay the utilities. You know, all those other kinds of bills. Pay the attorney fees, right? That's fine. But what you can't do is you can't pay a family member for providing care services, okay? And there's a wide, you know, in the regs, it's a very wide range, you know, driving around to doctor's appointments. There's a very wide range of services that fall under the category of care services that you cannot reimburse a family member for, or anybody else for them. We had a case where it was the neighbors who were pitching in to help out. And dad goes into the nursing home, and it's like, you know, here's the bill for cleaning out the house. I mean, here's the thing for the dumpsters that we had to rent. Well, we got the money for the dumpsters, but not the money for the neighbors to fill the dumpsters. Okay, so you got to be very, very careful when you're providing services to somebody, especially when you're paying them while the person is where we're trying to get qualified for the Medicaid. Okay, the big, big problem, and certainly whenever we have a family member in a caretaker role, caregiver role, you should immediately generally assume that in the absence of an attorney telling you that this is okay, right? If the attorney isn't telling you this is absolutely okay, here's my opinion in writing saying it's okay, then you shouldn't do it, because that area is just, you know, it's like the There's like grandkids taking grandma's money for crack, you know. The situations that the court sees are usually the extreme ones, and then they just assume that everybody's like that, and, you know, generalization. But that's what you're dealing with. That's the mindset that you're dealing with. You are treated like you're stealing, okay? And it will lead to a divestment. You've been listening to The David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, inviting you to a free life plan workshop anytime you'd like to come on down.
Oh, holy night. Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Man, it doesn't show signs of stopping, and I brought me some corn for popping. The lights are turned way down low. Let it snow, let it snow.
Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. And no, this show does not show any signs of stopping. But we don't have any corn for popping. I haven't seen any around here. Maybe for the microwave, I don't know. Anyway, you have found the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. Oh, I did want to mention the first part, but I forgot. As some of you faithful listeners know, First Lieutenant Kevin Carrier is over in Afghanistan, and he was telling me that there are some that they've been getting some care packages from over here, and so if you have any interest whatsoever in sending a care package to some very deserving soldiers with the 1st Cavalry Division, just give us drop me an email, you know, and we won't send you anything else. If you just want that, his contact information, we'll go ahead and we'll send you that back, no problem. The preferred treat at this point, at least, is jerky. Any kind of jerky is well received. So or anything else you want to send, obviously, but he was telling me they've gotten some. There's some veterans groups and there's some other folks who've been sending his unit some care packages, and it gets addressed to him, and then he kind of shares it out. So if you'd like to get in on a little bit of that Christmas spirit, we can certainly be more than happy to facilitate that. All righty, you can call right now, of course, 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843. And if you'd like to follow along with the letters on your telephone keypad, that's 888-GO-DAVID. And we'll get your question on the air. Here's just get some more of our emails. If there are two executors who are siblings, so brother and sister on the will, and both resign, all right, can the two executors appoint two other siblings in their place? Or do the new executors have to be appointed by the court? Well, the answer is appointed by the court. See, there's a fundamental difference between transferring assets after death through a trust versus transferring assets after death through a will or through probate. And probate is the difference. See, when you're transferring assets through a will, what is a will anyway? A will is instructions to probate court. The instructions to probate court, here's how I want my stuff distributed, okay? And the probate court, right, appoints somebody, generally the executors, okay? See, here's the idea. You're in Meijer. You're in a grocery store, right, or a department, whatever. You're at Cabela's. And you went in for arrowheads, and you wound up with a, God knows, you know, fishing tackle, whatever. And you got an armload of stuff. That's the idea. You're wandering around the store with an armload of stuff. Now, if you slip and fall, that stuff is going to go flying, right? And then, you know, you're gone, okay? But the stuff is all flying all over the place, right? It's all scattered all around. That's what happens when people die or become disabled in their house, their bank account, whatever, is in their own name. Are you with me on this? You go from having complete control over your stuff to no control at all. So the janitor in the store is the one who cleans up the mess. In real life, it's the job of the probate court to clean up your mess. Are you with me on that? Does that make sense? So, okay, so the probate court comes out to clean. Well, the probate court has got a lot of these messes all over the place because most people, right, don't really plan ahead very well. And so the court can't do it by itself. So what it does is it appoints executors. And the process is really you come to the probate court and you say, hey, probate court, mom died, dad died, relative died, whoever, okay? And I would like to be the one to clean up this mess. I got all these property all over here. Please, judge, please, probate court, you know, make me your junior deputy janitor, okay? Let me clean up this mess. And the probate court generally says, okay. But the power, the authority flows from the probate court. Are you with me on this? The authority to clean up the mess is not with the kids, is not under the will. The authority to transfer the assets and everything else resides in the probate court. Okay, you got to go to the court. You don't get to do this on your own. Right? It's the borrowed authority of the court that the executors are operating under. There, you become almost an officer of the court. Well, and you have a fiduciary duty to do it right and to follow all the court rules when you become executor or personal representative or administrator, whatever you want to say. Are you with me on this? So when the executor says, "Hey, I don't feel like doing it anymore. I want somebody else to do it." Well, who's it up to decide who gets to be the junior deputy janitor? Well, the Lord High Janitor, that's who. In other words, it's the probate court, the judge, who gets to decide, is this person who wants to clean up the mess, who wants to transfer the assets, who wants to act as personal representative, guardian, conservator, is this the right person to do it? Okay? And I don't know. So we have a hearing. And the judge decides, are you the right person to do it? So it's not up to the executor to say, I don't feel like doing this anymore. Let sister do it. Okay? It's up to the court to decide that. Very different with a trust. Because in a trust, you can allow, if you decide, you can say, hey, number one, we're not in probate at all. Okay? Because there is no mess because everything was held in the trust. And when we get back, we'll go into that a little bit more in depth. Just how it is that when you create a trust, you not only avoid probate, but you can also empower the kids who do not want to serve as trustee anymore. You empower them to choose other trustees. You've been listening to The David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney.
I'll have a blue Christmas without you. I'll be so blue just thinking about you. Decorations of red on a green Christmas tree. If you're not here with me, and when the blue snowflakes start falling, that's when those blue memories start calling.
Oh, how can you interrupt Blue Christmas anyway? But I guess I gotta do it because we're not licensed to play the whole song, so I gotta interrupt at some point. Sorry, I'd like to listen to the rest of it too, but we don't have a license for that. We can only use bits and pieces. So anyway, I know it's a disappointment to you, but this is the David Carrier Show, and I'm David Carrier, interrupting the king. Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo. How'd you like to be the person in the background doing that? Isn't that anyway? It's just perfect, you know, perfect example of its kind. Anyway, you're listening to the David Carrier Show, another perfect example of its kind. And this is the place where you can get your questions answered regarding estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. So give us a shout, why don't you? 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843. You can always go to the website, davidcarrierlaw.com. That's right, davidcarrierlaw.com. Or you can drop us an email, david@davidcarrierlaw.com. I'd love to get the emails. If you have a question, comment, or concern, give us a shout. That's all good all the time. And, of course, we do these life plan workshops. We do them all the time. The reason we do them all the time is because stuff happens all the time. You know, last week, 2 weeks ago, a month ago, right, your spouse didn't have a Alzheimer's diagnosis. Now you do. All right, you want to wait 3 months? Do you want to wait a year or two? Or would you like to come into the next available life plan workshop, which will be just in a couple weeks? That's why we do them every week, because when you have a need, we're going to be there for you. It's kind of like this show, right? It's kind of like, you know, every Sunday morning on the way to church, you can find out what is going on. And, of course, if you're listening in at one of our affiliate stations, it may not be Sunday morning. I get that. But you can still find out every single week because that's why we're here. And if you drop us an email, then we can really focus in on your particular issue. However, got to say it, this is a lively legal discussion and not legal advice, right? Got to be sure of that. Got a question about setting up a trust. Let's get to one of the emails here. We're in the process of setting up a trust for my mother, with me, the son, being the trustee. Purpose of the trust, shelter my mother's medical settlement. So let's assume it was a medical malpractice settlement, some chunk of money that came in, from future claims by Medicare, Medicaid, and so on. Also, this trust would allow her to apply for Medicare and SSI later on. The attorney who is setting up the trust is asking that the other attorney, the medical settlement attorney, the medical malpractice attorney, I guess, or the personal injury attorney, to transfer the entire amount of the settlement to him with the check written in his name. The trust attorney claims that this way the entire amount of the settlement would be sheltered since my mother has never received any money in her name. We are thinking that the trust attorney may simply take the money and run the sum in excess of $200,000. Can a trust be set up first and the money transferred later? Well, you know, it's kind of a weird way to do it, isn't it? Generally the check, you know, a settlement check is paid to the injured person and the personal injury attorney, which is necessary in order to get the personal injury attorney to get them their fees, right? Because you wouldn't give the money to the recipient. And then the attorney would never get paid, right? And now, but this is odd. I got to tell you, this, you know, this way of setting up is very. I mean, number one, the entire amount of settlement would be sheltered since my mother never received any money in her name. You may recall in the last hour we had a situation where the child had refused, whatever you want to say, to go to probate so that her mother's house would not be in her name, okay? And then assign the rights over to the third gen, to the daughter. So we had grandmother, daughter, granddaughter, and mother, who was going to get the house, assigned her rights to granddaughter, so it kind of skipped over. That doesn't work, you know? And to the extent it works only because it's a fraud, okay? Because it's a... You know, it's in violation of the rules, and you're pretending things are one way when they're actually another way. So, you know, this idea that the entire amount of the settlement, because it was never, that's just, okay, let's deal with that first. That's ridiculous. That is ridiculous, okay? But is it possible to create a trust where you've got a lump sum? Lump sum comes in wherever. It could be an inheritance. Could be settlement, could be whatever. The lump sum of money comes in, and we would like this money to hang around. We would not like this money to go to SSI or to the nursing home or whatever. Okay, we would like to keep this money together. Well, there are two ways of doing that. There's what we call a D4A trust. Basically, what this is it's a supplemental needs trust or a special needs trust that's established, could be by the court. Generally, it's through the court, where the money came in, and now you have in the very particular rules for it. But sometimes it's called a Medicaid payback trust. I don't know if you heard of those. D4A or Medicaid payback trust. The idea here is, yeah, I'm on the Medicaid, but I just got $100,000, $200,000, right? Wouldn't it be nice? See, here's the thing. If that money goes directly to the Medicaid, okay, goes directly, why the heck would I pursue the claim? Right? Why would I go after these people? I wouldn't, because I'm not going to get any benefit from it anyway. What do I care? You see? So you're on Medicaid, you were injured, now you're on the Medicaid, you know, for whatever reason. Why would I go after the person who did the injury if I don't get any benefit from it? The answer is you wouldn't. So what they say is, and this is kind of the rationale behind the rule, or a rationale at least, is, okay, well, we'll let you keep your money and you can spend it. It can be used to supplement the Medicaid. But the deal is, if there's any leftovers, we get the leftovers. Medicaid payback trust. So the idea here is we've set up this trust. You're injured in a car accident. Now you're in a coma. Now you're in the nursing home, right? Medicaid will pay for that if you don't have the money. Or will, once you run out of money, which of course is going to happen pretty quickly, then Medicaid will. Now, what do I do with the settlement money? Do I say, forget it, I'm not going to pursue the settlement because I'm not going to get any benefit from it? Or do I pursue the settlement, right? And this is the way it works now. I pursue the settlement, and that money can be used for the benefit of the person who was injured. Okay? It's got to be set up the right trust established by the probate court and all the rest of this stuff. But once we do it that way, you're going to be, that money is going to be able to be used for that person's benefit to get extras. Whatever extras there may be available, we can use that money to get the extras. Okay? But then, when the person dies, whatever is left, that is going to go back to the state to repay the Medicaid. So that's why we call Medicaid payback trust. And certainly it's possible, but I tell you what, when you've got an estate planning attorney or elder law attorney saying, yeah, just put the check in my name. Yeah, and that way, because that way it won't count. Well, look, that's fishy as a fish tank you haven't taken care of. I don't know how fishy that is, okay? But I smell mackerel, right? Not very good. So don't do that. Get a real elder law attorney. There are things that can be done, very effective things that can be done, but giving the money to an attorney and then dodging it because it was never in mom's name, That's nonsense. I don't care where you are. You've been listening to The David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Welcome back to The David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. We've got Dawn on the line. Good morning, Dawn. Welcome to the David Carrier Show.
Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, not a problem.
My question for you today is, I have account that's a direct deposit for my Social Security.
Uh-huh.
And then I have my savings account and that I use in checking combined.
Dawn, if I could ask, do you have anything else deposited to the Social Security account?
No, it's just direct deposit.
Okay. But there's no other money going in there?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right, good.
I wondered which one I should be using for everyday expenses and checking, writing, et cetera, and why.
Well, I would suggest that, if you have a budget pulled together, that what you do is that money direct deposits to the Social Security, right, and then do a transfer, just set it up with the bank, do a monthly transfer into your checking account. Now, what that will do over time, if there's savings in the savings and slash checking, right, what will happen is the direct deposit Social Security account will go up and the savings account will go down, right, because you're not putting the full Social Security amount into that savings anymore. You're retaining it in the Social Security account. And I would advise you to do that, to do it just that way. The reason for it is that if there should be liability, car accident, credit card debt, cosign kid student loans, you name it, you know, wherever the liability might come from, creditors can reach your savings, okay? But they cannot reach Social Security or the proceeds from Social Security. Now, if we've got an account that the only money that ever went in that account was Social Security money, right, which is this direct deposit, okay, then not only is it purely Social Security money, it's also very easy to prove that it's Social Security money. And that's the key. It's not so much what the facts are, it's the facts that you can prove. Because what will happen lots of times is people will get these accounts sort of commingled. You've got the pension in there, you've got the this, that, and the other thing. And while the bulk of it may be Social Security, the money still goes out the window when a judgment shows up. So that's why we would want this one account to be nothing but Social Security money. And provably.
So if you don't need the transferring of funds, just let it build up, and that's all the better then.
Yes.
Oh, great.
Exactly. You know, and that's the fastest way to do it. We'd just be, you know, don't spend any more money a month, right? But then don't take anything out of the Social Security, and then dry up the savings that's in this other account. And once that's done, once that's done, so now you've essentially replaced your savings with pure Social Security money, right?
Great.
And then you set up that monthly payment.
Very good. I thank you kindly.
Oh, thank you. You're very, very, very welcome. Yeah, you know that it's we call it Medicaid. That's asset protection. 101 is to protect your Social Security that money that way. And you know, over the years, you know, it's kind of fun. It's kind of fun when you do the show. You never know who's listening or what effect it's having, but. You know, we've gotten at least half a dozen people who have used that technique and very much to their benefit, who took the trouble to call and say, hey, we did that and it really worked out very well. One of the things that we just started today, because I just thought of it today, is the personal invitation to the Life Plan Workshop. You know, I got this idea with this. There are TVs on here in the studio, and they had that ad where people run around giving people lottery tickets, right? So my thought was, well, if you get a lottery ticket under the tree, wouldn't it be nice to have a personal invitation to a Life Plan Workshop under the tree? Wouldn't that be nice? And so if you've been trying to get somebody to come to one of these things, you know, come to one of the workshops, and you would like, just drop us an email and say, I would like you a personal invitation for whoever. You know, give us some data on the thing, right? And we will send you, either directly to you or we can mail it to whoever you want us to. But if you want us to send it to you, you know, we have very nice, very nice note paper embossed and all the rest of the stuff. Find out, just, you know, request it. And then you can, you know, discreetly put it in their stocking or hang it from the tree or something. I don't know. Let's somebody's got to be the pioneer on this. You know, it's like the Black Friday. It's kind of like the Black Friday work. At least I hope it works out like the Black Friday workshops. You know, we started doing these years ago, and the first couple were, I don't want to say they were busts, but there weren't that many people there. Well, you know, we had over 75 people in three workshops, you know, came to the workshops over the over Black Friday and Saturday. So, you know, that's pretty cool. But it's got to get started. And, you know, the Black Friday pioneers are now in the Hall of Fame. And if you would like, you can be in the Hall of Fame as well with a personal invitation that we'll send to you. Or you can use it, like I say, as a stocking stocking stuffer. Just drop us an email, david@davidcarrierlaw.com. We'd be more than happy to get those out to you. I think we've got time for one more email here. There's so many good ones. Here's one. And this is one that comes up a lot. This is the ladybird deed. You know, the ladybird deeds are the sort of the flavor of the week. It's the new thing. It's the wow, you know, a lot of wow factor to the ladybird deeds, as if these were something new, which they're not. But here's the question. Will transfer on death deed, which is the ladybird deed, protect my mother's home from Medicaid reimbursement if it was filed over 5 years prior? Mother just entered nursing home this month. Well, the answer is it doesn't matter that it was 5 years ago. Okay, and it's saying Medicaid reimbursement. I'm guessing what we're talking about here is estate recovery. Now, a ladybird deed will protect against estate recovery right now in Michigan. Right now, it will protect against it, also Pennsylvania, because there's no lien on the property right now. It's a 100% probate-based process. Are you with me on that? Because it's a probate-based process, and the transfer on death deed, if the recipient is still alive, avoids probate, because it avoids probate, well, yeah, then now it works. Not because it was 5 years ago. It works because it avoids probate. Okay? You don't own the thing, but it does avoid probate, and that way it works. Now, in states where, which is most of them, where they slap a lien on a Medicaid mortgage on your property, ladybird deed doesn't help you at all. Okay? And in situations where we've got a married couple, there are other benefits that you lose by doing the ladybird deed. So, point here, we're mixing a couple of ideas. We've got the five-year divestment period. We've got the transfer on death deed. We've got Medicaid reimbursement, estate recovery. Right? There's a lot of moving parts to this. It's got to be done right, but if it is, it'll work. But like I say, this is sort of a typical, you know, we're mixing, we've got a goulash here of different concepts. We need to know exactly what it is we're doing and why we're doing it. You've been listening to The David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney.